best value to the city based on the features as well as the cost. Of course, as I've said, well, I can't state on the record because until we sign the contract, I can't disclose what the winning bid is. But essentially, there's a couple $100,000 that will not be covered by the grant. And I've, you know, let people know that we're looking at about a minimum. If we can get 150 users, which I'm not there yet, it would be 150 users would be about a $1,500 fee per user for that 5-year contract. One thing that I didn't fully understand and I've got to work out, and I think I discussed, I think I put it in here, is our understanding was, and Scott helped me if I'm wrong, that there was going to be no annual increase in fees. But with my conversation that I had with the Journal, is I think they're anticipating that, so I've got to, there's going to be an increase in those user fees over that 5-year period. I don't think it'll be that much. I'm hoping it's not that much, but still it would be less than what each jurisdiction would incur, you know, if they were trying to negotiate on this on their own. My first substantial conversation with them was Thursday afternoon. And as I put in here, the process isn't going to be as easy as I had hoped. He said once or twice that they're not making any money on this contract, so as a result, not willing to make a lot of concessions. The biggest one, Chris Jennings felt that because I've disclosed the date that the grant closes and how much money we have, which is what the previous contract analyst suggested that I do to be open and honest, but that he feels like I've given away my negotiating position, but we'll see how that goes. State contracting's position is that UPC enter into a type of master contract where it's indicated that we just simply have the money and we will pay out the money, and that there will be individual contracts negotiated and entered into with each jurisdiction. Chris says that's not uncommon when the state is negotiating contracts on behalf of the state with sub agencies wanting to join in on that. But Journal's position is no, they just want essentially one contract, one size fits all contract, you know, for the purchase price, but then, you know, one contract for each city and or county that wants to enter into that. My concern is, not knowing this for sure, it was just more of an assumption or an impression. I mean, how county and cities, I mean, how do you feel about that? Is a one-size-fits-all contract going to work? What Barry and Steve and I talked about, though, is we take the approach is, hey, you're getting this at a substantially reduced amount. You're just going to have to live with the contract.
I don't know technology-wise if they can tweak your respective system or what it is that you're doing, but I'm thinking if this is something the prosecution counsel is putting out there, it's up to each jurisdiction whether they want to join in and be a user under this contract or if they want to negotiate their own. And of course, the savings is the upfront cost. I mean, everyone's still going to have their annual licensing and maintenance fees, but that initial chunk of change. Is it worth going with the one-size-fits-all contract?
So that's kind of the approach then that I'm going to take is one-size-fits-all. Now, the contract that was provided as part of the RFP that's our starting point, of course, is just their standard contract between them and a single user. So it's going to require some tweaking. And so what I'm going to do I'm going to try and get Salt Lake's contract because they're going with the prosecutor, which I failed to mention, that's the product that we're going with, not JustWare. JustWare is what everybody else in the state is using, which is the standalone, you hosted version, whereas the prosecutor is the cloud-based, and it meets the intent of the RFP and the requirements of the grant that, we attempt to unify the prosecutors across the state so that they can, share certain types of data. So I'm going to try and get contracts. I've got Utah County's contract, but what I'm going to try and do is draft something, or at least certain terms that are of benefit to us. That was Chris's recommendation, is that we draft our own. As I've said all along, I'm not a contracts expert, so I will be reaching out Spence and Missy, when I finally get to Steve recapping that, I said, you know, we can reach out to the AG's office for their resources as well. So I feel okay about it, but I'm going to have to rely on those with the expertise. They are willing to abide by Utah law, as well as, you know, willing to mediate and arbitrate any issues here in Utah. You know, they wanted it to be in California, but of course, you know, we're not going to do that. You guys can't afford to travel to California on issues. JustWare, those that are using JustWare, I don't know how soon they're going to want to convert to e-prosecutor. I think Boxover County is wanting to do that. Jeff, I don't know if you guys are going to do that or just keep using JustWare for the term of your contract.
Are they talking to you about transitioning to e-prosecutor?
Okay, to be honest, I'm going to let Sim work out the bugs before I transfer.
Sorry. All right. Well, and that really is we're all now relying on Sim because the deployment issues, and Ron will get into this in just a second, you don't have this in your materials because this also was a phone call yesterday afternoon after I had prepared this. But what we're hoping is that by creating a Utah-centric new prosecutor product, that will speed up the deployment time to the rest of the offices in the state. We realize that Salt Lake is going to have all the bells and whistles that some of the smaller agencies are not going to need. But by virtue of the fact that it's designed for Utah, we're hoping that it will, like I said, speed up the process. In their contract, it says that, you know, it's a year from signing the contract to the go-live date, which obviously is not what we want, and they recognize, or that's written in the contract, you know, to give them the max amount of time. They're hoping that we can get everybody up and running within 2 years. I know that it's not what everybody wants to hear, but that's just the reality.
So Don, you say it's a five-year contract, so when does our 5 years begin?
When you sign, or when it goes live? When you go live. Yeah, so that's the other thing that just is weird about this whole process is, you know, it's 5 years, but you get into that, you know, how do you figure out the time? The other issue that we're looking, well, I'll let Ron talk about that when he gets into that. So, we're waiting for Sim's office to work out all the bugs. We're hoping that we can benefit from that. Ron, will you go over then what we talked about then on our phone call on the technical side?
Yeah, I think there's just a few issues that we need to understand, one of which is that what we're getting is a cloud-hosted solution. Everybody will have their own separate piece of the data, but it's all going to be the same program. So when you see a screen in one office, it'll be the same screen in another office, you know, for inputting or grabbing data or whatever. But there are some documents or different thing. You can have your customized documents. So like if you want to have it look formatted differently because your court wants it formatted differently, that's fine. We'll do that. But as far as the actual user layout, the user interface, it's going to be the same for everybody that has the system. And so part of the issue that brings up is, okay, well, what if you need this or need that or whatever? It's going to be the same thing we did with PIMS, essentially, is we try it, you cater it, you make it work for everybody best you can, and then do some little tweaks, and people that don't need the tweaks don't use it, but it'll still be there. I don't know if you can kind of understand that. It's the same kind of idea as PIMS was. We wanted to make it one thing and not have to have 15 different, 20 different products. So it'll be the one user interface for everybody, and we'll make tweaks with it to adjust where we need to. And then people that don't need those little differences, that's fine. They don't use it. They just use the basic stuff. So, and it's an ongoing thing where we can make adjustments as we go through it. So as we get to a point, they say, well, I need this, a different layout, a different form to input this data or whatever. We can build that in as we go, but as we do it, everybody will have the same thing. It won't be like one county will have it and somebody else won't, or one city or whatever. So it is like they say, one size fits all, but I don't think that's a huge issue. We've dealt with that with PIMS, and it'll be the same kind of thing here, with the exception, of course, of documents. I talked about the data on the back end and everything, and it's going to be hosted with Amazon Cloud Services, basically, on a SQL Server database. So you don't need to know what that means. It's just that it's a pretty good system, pretty secure. It's very secure. Uptime is pretty is best industry best. You know, there's going to be downtime that just happens, but it's usually on a weekend or nights when they schedule it usually so that everybody knows it'll be down for an hour or two, and then it's back up and running.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So you're talking about this is case management, so the files will be on the cloud.
The data will be in the cloud. Yes.
And how is BCI reacting to that?
We're letting CentOffice work that out.
It's our data.
Yeah.
Who cares what BCI wants?
Well, the criminal histories, they generally throw a fit when you do anything other than...
Just don't tell them.
All right.
Are we recording?
No, so, I don't know how that works because I don't know what that is. But no, it's
like criminal history.
It's very secure and a lot of governments use it, so I don't see... But Utah's is a different beast than a lot of other governments, so...
I can answer
that. I don't know where we're at with that.
Jestware claims that their cloud-based solution has a certification level that BCI...
He did say that, that's right. He did say something about that when Intertalk says it'll be okay.
Yeah, I didn't understand the nomenclature, but they claim that they've complied with the FBI's requirements, BCI, everybody, so.
Great. So we'll be perfect.
Yeah, and I've attended several conferences where we talked about this type of thing, criminal history, and a lot of them do it in the cloud, and they have to be certified, like Jeff was saying, and Internal Technologies says that they are. I haven't seen documents that prove that, but. And we also talked about security and stuff. Basically, everybody that comes onto this system will have a separate partition, a separate little chunk of the database. The whole database is going to be like in a circle, and you have your chunk here, and somebody else will have theirs here, and it'll all be completely separate. But it will be made so that with permissions given, you can do a search on data that's in the whole system. And so if you're searching for Jane Doe, and if you could get a hit in Cache County, in Washington County, or Heber City, or whatever, if the right permissions are given to do that type of a search, but it won't. Yes.
Right, but we need to modify that, because that's what we had wanted all along. But it's only for those agencies that are going to be on e-prosecutor.
It's only those that are on the same system.
So that's
system,
that's where that's the hurdle that we've got to cover is getting the big counties that are with Jestware to get them on. So
and it's technically possible to do that type of thing with anybody's database anywhere in the state as long as you work out the underlying issues. But that's not going to be a part of this whole thing. But anybody that comes on with the system that UPC is. You know, the prosecutor in the same cloud will be able to do that cross agency search. It's going to be not everything. You're not going to see the whole case file, but you'll see the important pieces of it.
So do we know approximately the area where we're going to be on yearly user fees per user on this?
Well, it's like you said.
I don't know. There's going to be some increases, but
right now, with the amount that the grant didn't cover for the 5 years.
And that's the upfront we're talking about there.
Yeah, after that, it's... So what journal submitted is what their annual license and maintenance fees are. For 1 to 50 users, it's $1,000 per license, and then $500 hosting fee, which is $1,500. If we go up to 51 to 100 users, you then tack on to that $1,500 will always remain a base, and then it becomes cumulative. So if we have 51 to 100 users, what's 1,800 plus 850? 1,750. No, that's not right.
Going
up? 1,800
plus
350? No. Let's see.
Down.
It goes down.
Yeah, it's 80 per license.
Yeah.
Plus
so the more users that we have on the system, So if you plan about $1,500 with an increase, we're there, but again, until we negotiate the actual terms of the contract, I can't give you a definitive answer.
Right, so the price you're talking about right now, where you told everybody about $1,500 per user, is that going to cover the first 5 years of user's fees or not?
That's
my question.
That's going to cover the excess that the grant doesn't pay for.
Well, I don't know what the grant's paying for up front anyway.
Right, well,
so, I'm not privy to all the information. So we're going to pay $1,500 up front on those, so that's just essentially the cost of the software. And then we're going to get a yearly maintenance fee of about $1,500 per user every year thereafter.
After the 5 years.
Well, that was my question.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, the way I understand it, cover user fees and storage fees for probably a couple of years, mm-hmm. and then somewhere down the road, we're going to have to start paying this fee.
Correct. And what I'm hoping at that point is whether it's UPC or, you know, we create kind of some kind of a collective bargaining unit that includes the counties that are already on JustWare, that we now, you know, have this big bargaining chip that we have that we can use with Journal. So that's ultimately the goal. Anything else?
Yeah, I'm just going to say the way I understood the pricing thing is that the first. Whatever fee we pay up front covers user fees and licensing through the 5 years, and then after that there would be
be an increase based on how much use and things of that.
Journal Technologies talk like they would do an increase each year even during the 5 years. I don't know, it depends on how the contract reads, but my understanding of the contract was that their bid was for the whole 5 years,
right.
And then they could do an increase, but that's a contract thing and I don't know how that's going to work out. But you will. It will be. But as far as if you wanted to, for example, if you wanted to have a backup of your data, the system will let you export your data to a local file that then can be read by other systems, and you can use it for however you want. I mean, as a backup, even though they back up the cloud, they do a really good job of that. It's in multiple locations. So if a disaster happens at their main place, it fails safe over to another location. So like if you had a hurricane in, like they had down in New Orleans, it wouldn't destroy all your records. You just immediately back up to another one. Even though you have that, some people want a backup of their data another way. The system will allow you to do that.
Okay.
Also, if you wanted to opt out after a little while, you just say, I'm just not going to, this is just too much for us, we don't want to do that. You could bring your data back out and then put it into something else. If that were just, you know, just looking for the future, you may get mad at Journal Technologies or the price may become prohibitive, whatever. So that is possible to get your data back out, and then from there you could do something with it. And so we were concerned about that. Other than that, there's a lot of other little technical issues. I don't know if you want to go over the whole thing, but one thing I wanted to do, the storage costs. They accounted in their bid, they accounted for a certain amount of storage, and I can't remember what the number is. It's a pretty big number. So I looked into what the storage cost would be, and with Amazon hosting, the storage cost per terabyte is about $40. A terabyte is about 1,000 gigabytes. Another terabyte is a decent amount of space.
$40 a year.
But the one thing to consider is if you start throwing up videos, that can use terabytes of data very quickly. So one of the body cam videos, and that. So if we start storing that in the system, the cost of storage is going to go up a lot.
And the download.
And the time of uploading it is slow, and then downloading it takes up almost as much time. And so that's going to have to be. It's not a streaming service, in other words, for videos. It'll store your data. It'll store the videos. It'll download them so you can view them. But it's not streaming it like, you know, you go onto Amazon Prime and stream their videos. It's not downloading the video, it's just giving you a little piece of it at a time. It seems seamless, but that isn't the way it would work with this cloud host. So videos are something you're going to, and that type of file, you're going to have to talk about a little bit about how you're going to do that and if you're going to store those. Because it's all one cloud situation, you're running off the cloud servers, if somebody is downloading or uploading a bunch of big videos, it could potentially slow it down for everybody else.
So we talked about that.
That's something we'll have to talk about internally about how we're going to manage that.
Yeah, so maybe just make a policy that you don't store your videos in the cloud. You know, you store those locally. And then talk about connectivity and...
Okay, and the other thing, of course, with being in the cloud, if you don't have an internet connection, you don't have your access. So that's something that has to be taken into consideration. If your internet connection is a slow, spotty one, you'd have a slow, spotty access. Even though the servers are doing a good job of giving it to you, but your internet connection getting to it, that's something that you have to consider as part of the process. And there's no workaround. If you don't have internet connection, you don't have access to the system. But there's a lot of different ways to get internet connection. There's Wi-Fi, there's MiFi, there's, you know, can even connecting to your phone can sometimes give you access using your phone as a hotspot through cell service. But all that possibly has a cost that you have to consider too. So just the fact that it's a cloud solution, you have to be aware of that as we go into it. So if you're in court and you have an internet connection, you won't be able to get to the system, so you'll have to get an internet connection somehow if you're in court. I don't know whether through the court, whether it's just something you provide, through your county or city provides, whichever. So that's the downside of a cloud-hosted solution. The upside of it is that it's available from anywhere you have an internet connection, including on the beach or anywhere. Oh, is that a downside? Okay, yes. Sorry, that could be a downside. So if the storage thing, going back to storage, we know that some people use more than others. So what they'll do as part of this is they'll monitor, they'll set it up so we know how much storage each agency is using, so that if one agency is being a storage hog because they have to, they have more stuff going on, then the cost of the storage will go up, but it'll be allocated per your percentage of usage, not just equal to everybody, no matter what you're using. That's one of the concerns I had, is that, well, what if we have one big user that's using up 3/4 of the storage? Well, then, if the storage cost goes past what they've allocated as part of the bid, the cost does go up, but then it only goes up incrementally based on your actual usage of the storage. The data, so.
Any questions of Ron or Bob on that? Thank you.
Just maybe one question. Uh-huh. You talked about creating a user group to kind of help
create this
off the shelf of one size fits all.
Yeah, thank you. So we need to do that for the reasons that Ron is talking about and whatnot. So we could use the same committee that reviewed the RFP, other than Judge Eldridge. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But we'll be reaching out and needing to do that to address this. And again, we'll include county, city, admin people, IT people, so.
Oh, there is one other thing I think we need to mention. As we go along, once it's deployed, there will be administrative needs, like maybe you need to create a new report or a new search or a new document or whatever. Somebody needs to be able to administer that. Since it's a cloud thing, we're not. They said we can't allow everybody in the office and everybody shares the same thing. Every office can't have an administrator go make whatever changes they want willy-nilly, and because it'll affect everybody. So we have to have kind of a central administrator person or group, and they would like UPC to take on that role, and then we deal with it however we want internally.
So are you saying that one agency can reach into another agency's
data? No, they can't see their data, but the user interface. So you can build forms in the system. Forms mean the way you type in data, like first name, last name, phone number on a defendant or something. You can create little input or output or search queries and stuff that will be global for the whole if you had it individually for an individual office, it'd be just for your office. But since this will be a one side, everybody gets the same thing. If somebody makes a change to the system, everybody sees that change.
So if there's if one jurisdiction has a conflict, they send the case over to another jurisdiction to handle the conflict. The original conflicted jurisdiction has no access or cannot obtain.
Oh, I don't know. That's not what I'm talking about.
I don't know
how that will be handled.
Well, you'll need to address that.
An answer to your original question is when you type in a name, it will bring up that defendant and it will show
statewide,
or at least, you know, those that are on the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to see only some information, not all. But yeah, we'll have to address that, you know.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, when we do the conflict. My guess is that the agency that you send it to would then be responsible or would need to then send that information back to the referring agency so they could upload it. Once it's done, you know, what information, whether, you know, case file notes, whatever information that you would want as the referring agency. You know,
I didn't think about that, so we didn't ask that question.
It doesn't go back to the original.
Well, no, just if you want that information for whatever reason. Otherwise, the only thing you're going to be able to see is just, you know, the defendant's name and the charges, what the conviction was. I mean, there's going to be a little bit more than that, but no notes, you know, stuff that's the confidential information you won't have access to.
So one county attorney won't be able to access another county attorney's?
That's going to go in what parameters we set on access, right?
Right.
I think it's a permission-based thing, so whatever. I think that's something that needs to be worked out as we discuss how it's going to be deployed and who's going to, how we access each other's data is going to be. It's not going to be where anybody can reach in and change somebody else's data in any way, but you'll be able to reach in and get some kind of a look at what they have. As far as when they transfer the actual case to another agency, I'm not sure how that will work as far as access.
We'll talk about that with them.
But that's something that needs to be discussed then.
One of the things that I liked when I went out to Provo to look at theirs was the interaction with their DA's office. It looked like you could just click a button and say, this ought to be a felony, and then you could click a button and go, nope, it's going to stay it's ought to be a misdemeanor, and some of that stuff that gets lost from city to county seemed to work nicely there. I don't know if we're going to get that direction.
It should be something very similar to that, because I mean it's the same people doing the software, so I don't know the internals of it.
Ron, when you say that there's just going to be one administrator, you're not talking about like a document creation, are you? Because
no, you could actually. I'm not quite sure about that, because in the documents, when we go to deploy to each place, we'll get the documents set up originally. But then as you go forward, you may need a different one or change to one. From what I understood from what they said, an administrator is the one that somebody who can reach in with administrative access has to do that. Maybe we do that locally for documents, globally for everything else.
It's not going to work unless we have that control.
No. You're going to be able to create your own documents with your own header and whatnot. The administrator more is like what you would consider a technical administrator that needs. The example that he used with me, because he could tell I was really basic in terms of computer programming, he says, if you want a purple drop-down box, and purple's not an option, well, the AT administrator can go in and create purple. But there's going to be some tailoring to templates that you'll be able to do as well as that document.
From what he said in our discussion yesterday, basically documents are the one thing that can be unique to each agency, each office that has it. The rest of it, the user interface part will be the same. So if we create a drop-down box that says case type, we're going to have the same case type.
It's going to be like a spill where you have to have an interagency agreement.
I guess we need to probably be clear on what, if your status is protected or privileged documents, what does that mean in terms of sharing it within the system? And if it's just an issue of like screening or having public access as a control group, that's different. But if it raises some issues.
It's in the parameters that we set up and what. And their offices can look at.
And how is the uploading of this going to happen in terms of interface? Is that going to be done seamlessly, or is that going to create administrative work for different agencies that may have large volume stuff?
Those are all questions that we don't have answers to yet.
Okay.
I'm not sure. You mean as far as changes to the core system, or?
Yeah, I'm just trying to.
We're going to have a central administration person or persons who are responsible for making changes to the core system, and that happens immediately.